Welcome to Crescent City Crime, dear listeners. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Brian.
And it is Pride Month.
That's right, June. June is Pride Month every year.
Yes. And, you know, because I'm working in the French Quarter now, and yesterday I saw quite a few people dressed up in their lovely, lovely colors, rainbow colors, different flag colors, all those beautiful colors out there.
Yesterday I saw a bartender over at Ruby Slipper Cafe around, I believe it was Bienville and Broad Street, down, what, Mid-City, yeah, Mid-City. And, you know, there was a bartender, this lady dressed in her pride colors. I complimented her.
Yeah.
On her pride attire.
Yeah, and, oh, also, I found out something new. You know those flags that we've been seeing? It's the traditional pride flag with the arrow that goes over it that's black and brown and then pink, blue, and white?
Yes.
So I learned that that's called the progress flag.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So now we know. All right. Well, to our dear listeners who are identify as not cisgender or heterosexual, we especially welcome you this month.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride to you. And also, yes, we know that this episode's a little bit late in coming this week, but without going into too much detail, I had a very rough week and I needed to recover because it was important to me to give this episode the justice that it deserves.
Yes, very much so. We're not a production line and we don't aspire to become a, quote, production line. We actually want to put our passion into these episodes. And Tracy works hard on her research for these episodes.
Yes, I do.
So we just don't want to do these episodes, you know, for our health.
Right, exactly. All right, so, Brian, we have been to New York City.
Yes, we have.
Yes.
It was 2 weeks after September 11th?
Yeah, but we're not getting into that.
But that's, our trip to New York had been planned before September 11th.
Yeah, we didn't plan it because of that. It was planned before that. You're correct.
Yes. We just made the decision to go ahead and take the trip.
Yes. But, Brian, did you know that, you know, New York City, of course, right, very diverse, a very rich history, okay? But did you know that New York City was essentially where Pride was born?
No, I did not know that.
Would you like to hear the story?
I would love to hear the story, and before you say that, I'm going to say it, especially for our listeners in New York. I love New York.
Yeah, we do. We love New York.
We love New York. We loved it. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Someday we do want to go back.
We thought we would have been back already,
but such is life.
Yes. Yeah, some of the best food I've ever eaten too. Those pastrami sandwiches were so great, and didn't they give us pickles and coleslaw with just about everything, I think?
Yeah, and most of the kosher delis that are dine-in in New York City, I believe that is the norm. They bring these delicious kosher pickles, coleslaw out as essentially complimentary appetizers.
Yeah.
Kind of in the same fashion as you go to a Tex-Mex place.
They give you chips.
Right, you expect chips and salsa, you know. Along a similar vein, you know, I'm so glad that we got to dine at the Carnegie Deli. While it still existed.
And did you know, though, so when we went there, we saw Phantom of the Opera. Did you know they're closing down Phantom of the Opera?
And I'm glad we got to see Phantom of the Opera in New York before it closed down. You know, all things end. You know, all good things must come to an end, unfortunately. It was a magnificent experience, for certain.
Yeah.
As was meeting Sir Ian McKellen.
And we also got a picture with Matthew Broderick. Remember that?
Yes, he was very nice. He was very outgoing.
This was when the producers was new.
Yes, and there were crowds and crowds and crowds of people. And if you were lucky, you could get a halfway decent ticket for the producers from a hotel concierge that wasn't a scalper's price.
Right.
You know, like, I remember we, through the concierge, we actually were able to get discount prices. Yes. For Phantom of the Opera and Dance of Death, which is what Sir Ian McKellen was in a Broadway.
It also had Helen Mirren and David Strathairn.
Oh, yes, yes. Although, of those three, it was Sir Ian McKellen who decided to meet his public at the stage door, take pictures, and do autographs. He was magnificent.
Also, remember, this was before, like, right before Lord of the Rings was coming out, and they had those two young men who went back there with photos of him as Gandalf.
It was a couple of, it was a guy and a girl.
Oh, it was a guy and a girl. I'm sorry. Okay.
They already had these pictures of Gandalf printed up, and he...
signed them?
Yes, he cheerfully signed them.
Yeah.
Graciously signed them. Ever the consummate gentleman,
and
Sir Ian McKellen is.
We have a picture with him as well. Yes. And I remember his shirt that he was wearing, because obviously they were in New Zealand filming Lord of the Rings. It was an I Heart New Zealand shirt.
Oh, that detail I forgot, although I haven't looked at the picture we took with him in quite some time.
It is somewhere.
And while we're here, yes, Sir Ian McKellen is gay. He's still with us. Happy Pride, Sir Ian McKellen.
If Sir Ian McKellen ever listens to this, I would be so freaking happy.
Yes.
Yes. We love you, Sir Ian McKellen.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Okay, so everybody, a little bit back on track here. Thank you to everybody who has been listening to us, who has been supporting us. I do want to tell you that next week, we are going to take a week off from the proper Crescent City Crime, but our Patreon episode where we discuss 1989's Batman will be up.
Okay. That sounds good. Yes. And that's especially pertinent to right now, because 1989's Batman, through DC's version of the multiverse, is going to be in that Flash movie.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that's, to me alone, that's probably a good reason to see this Flash movie.
Maybe.
Even though the actor who plays The Flash...
is a terrible person.
Ironically, is kind of...
a terrible person.
Yeah. You know, it's like... It's kind of ironic how someone like... someone who gets into trouble with teenage girls plays The Flash. You know, it makes me wonder what he's, if he's, you know, flashed around in real life, if you get what I'm saying, you know.
That's a terrible joke, Brian. It's a terrible joke. All right, everybody. All of our social media links will be in the show notes, as always. Make sure that you tell your friends about us, and especially...
tell your enemies. Especially your enemies.
We appreciate any ratings or reviews that you would like to give us. Please subscribe to us on whichever podcasting platform you prefer. And, of course, we are also on YouTube, so we're everywhere. So subscribe to us. It is free. And you will have the pleasure of hearing us once a week, at the very least.
Yes. And we will continue to offer our podcast service to you free of charge.
Yeah, free of charge. Yeah, the only thing that would be behind a paywall is a Patreon. And no matter what, if you just don't subscribe to Patreon, it's fine. We consider support to just be listening to the show.
Yes, we do. That's still supporting us, yes.
And, all right, so we're going to get into the episode proper. I am going to start this with a quote. Again, this is not my quote. This is from an anonymous Stonewall Riots participant. When did you ever see a fag fight back? Now times were a-changing. Tuesday night was the last night for bullshit. Predominantly the theme was, this shit has got to stop.
Yes. Yes. And, I mean, on that vein, let's be realistic. You look back in history, okay? You can't expect any group of people to just take abuse
forever
and subjugation, okay, in perpetuity, okay? It just doesn't happen. Okay? Eventually, they fight back.
Right.
Even if it's the even if you're talking about the elementary school kid. And they're going to fight back however way they can.
Yes.
And chances are, if you're the person who is doing the subjugation, okay, then you may not like the way they fight back.
And I also just want to say this. Y'all respect my transgender friends or I'm going to identify as a problem.
Yes.
I'm going to say that.
Yes. Respect everyone who is different from you. Don't hate people just because they're different from you. They just want to be who they are, just the same as you.
It has no bearing on your life whatsoever, what consenting adults do in their own home.
Right, or if someone identifies as a certain sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with you. But let's go ahead.
Yes. And I also, but I do want today's episode to serve as a reminder of how powerful community is, how powerful you as a person actually are, and how that even though I'm sure that there are some people who would listen to this podcast and would like to brand us all as snowflakes, et cetera, or woke or whatever, but enough snowflakes causes an avalanche.
Yes, yes, okay. And if anyone wants to brand me a snowflake, I don't care, okay? I really have nothing to prove to you mm-hmm. because, I mean, just for one thing, I'm a United States Marine, okay? I made it through my boot camp. I made it through my MOS school. I went to war, came back, okay? So, if you want to call me a snowflake, go ahead, but...
Yeah, and I also...
If you call me a snowflake knowing I'm a United States Marine Corps veteran of war, then you're the one who has a problem if you think I'm a snowflake and you're laughable.
I mean, I'm more snowflake than you are, this is true. But, you know, I've made it pretty far in my life being an accepting person, being a loving person, standing up for myself. You know, all these things are important, and I've made it this far in life, so there's that.
Yes, we all have our battles to fight, and if you've fought and won your battles in life, even whether you're a United States Marine or not, you're not a snowflake.
Or if you stand up for yourself, you're not a snowflake.
That's right.
I really do consider you to be a strong person if you stand up for yourself and if you can face adversity and get through it. You're not a snowflake.
That is correct by any interpretation, any stretch of the imagination.
So today's story is about overcoming adversity. So during the club scene in the 1950s and 1960s, open expressions of gay sexuality were usually greeted with hostility. The clubs that did welcome queer folk were often run by, would you believe, organized crime groups.
Oh. You know, well, I mean, it's quite brilliant.
It is, isn't it?
It really is, you know, because, you know, who would think that wise guys, you know, prizing masculinity,
I think,
you know, would have that as a front. That is hilarious.
Well, I'm pretty sure they were more into money than,
of course,
anything else, and I don't think they care who gave it to them.
No. No, wise guys are smart.
Yes, and, you know, also the legal system at this time was homophobic, okay? So, like, you could, you know, people would look at you and they'd bring, I mean, kind of like how they're trying to do today, they'd bring you as a pedophile or a bad person or a pervert or whatever. So, this prompted early homosexual groups to prove that gay people could be assimilated into society. So it's like, you know, gay conversion therapy. All of these methods or tricks or whatever, it doesn't work. Okay, none of that shit works. All right? Because if you're, you know, if you're gay or straight or whatever, I'm straight. I can't make myself gay.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and present my theory on those who offer conversion therapy. That's a scam.
It is.
It's a scam. Because they know that people certain people, like certain conservatives who have money, will fork it over to them.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, gay conversion therapy is actually a means of fleecing wealthy, bigoted, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Okay, just to name one group, wealthy white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Catholics.
Are.
Baptists.
Maybe to a lesser, the Catholics probably to a lesser extent.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, definitely some Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, of course, you know, Protestants are Baptist. Baptists are Protestants, of course, you know.
Isn't it like one just more extreme than the other or something like that?
Yes, yeah. Okay. Your religious fundamentalists being so absolute are going to be homophobic.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Yes, yeah. You know, whether you're a Christian, whether you're Christian or whether you are Islamic, if you're fundamentalist, you're typically going to be homophobic, and you just might be forking, if you've got lots of money, you might be forking it over to some shyster running his, you know, a gay conversion therapy school camp or whatever they want to call it.
Right. And during the last years of the 1960s, there was a lot of activity, you know, social and political, you know, like there was a civil rights movement, there was the counterculture of the 1960s. And, of course, there was the anti-Vietnam War movement. This was all converging at once, okay? You know, so kind of like today, it's very turbulent times. You know, today we have a lot going on as well. The Manhattan neighborhoods of Greenwich Village and Harlem were home to sizable gay and lesbian populations after the First World War. People who had served in the military took advantage of the opportunity to settle in larger cities. Okay, so this is how these little enclaves were born. Prohibition actually benefited the queer community because drinking alcohol was pushed underground, right? And so were these other behaviors that were considered immoral at the time. Of course, homosexuality was considered immoral. New York City passed laws against homosexuality in public and private businesses, but because alcohol was in such high demand, speakeasies were so numerous and temporary that authorities could not police them all.
Yeah. Now, and what I might add is excessive consumption of alcohol, okay, is considered by religious fundamentalists to be immoral, right?
Right.
Right. and they consider people who identify themselves as homosexual or engage in what they call homosexual activity is also immoral. So, but you see, to them, it's okay if you gorge yourself in excessive alcohol, as long as you are, you know, harassing women and taking an interest in women.
Right.
You know, of course, it doesn't seem to matter to them if you are behaving irresponsibly with women, as long as you're heterosexual, you know.
But yeah.
Enough of the soapbox there.
The social repression of this time resulted in a cultural revolution in Greenwich Village. Beat poets were writing about the evils of social organization. They were glorifying anarchy, drugs, and hedonistic pleasures over social compliance, consumerism, and closed-mindedness. Allen Ginsberg and William S. Burroughs, who were both famous writers, they were Greenwich Village residents. They wrote bluntly and honestly about homosexuality. Their writings attracted sympathetic, liberal-minded people, as well as homosexuals looking for a community.
Yeah, Greenwich Village has always been, you know, for quite a period of time, synonymous with the gay community.
It's still
among other places,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like parts of New Orleans, of course, and San Francisco, you know.
Yeah.
To name a couple more.
During the 1960s, a campaign to rid New York City of gay bars was in full effect by order of then Mayor Robert F. Wagner Jr. He was concerned about the image of the city in preparation for the 1964 World's Fair.
Wow. Wow. So, among other things, you know, a World's Fair is kind of supposed to be about
diversity.
Diversity, inclusiveness, yeah. You know, the
sharing of different cultures.
Right, right, exactly. You know, it's like when a city puts on the World's Fair, they're going to have their own pavilion, of course, you know. But, you know, just like New Orleans did when we hosted the World's Fair in 1984. But really, it's not just about your city. Although economically it is. But as far as what you come to see and do at a World's Fair, no, it's not all about your city. So, Your Honor, Mr. Mayor, you got it wrong here.
Well, Mayor Wagner was concerned about the image of the city, and the city revoked the liquor licenses of the bars, and undercover police officers worked to entrap as many queer folk as possible. Entrapment usually consisted of an undercover officer who found a man in a bar or a public park, engaged him in conversation, and if the conversation headed towards just even the possibility that they might leave together, the man was arrested for solicitation. So, you know, that's kind of a free speech infringement there, too.
Yeah, that's definite. That's a First Amendment infringement. And, of course, this doesn't apply to heterosexuals who want to solicit each other in the park. Of course, they're going to turn a blind eye to that.
Always.
You know.
So, the Stonewall Inn that was located... I'm sorry, it's still located... at 51st and 53rd Christopher Street, along with several other establishments in the city, was owned by the Genovese crime family. Okay, so remember, getting back to that organized crime, okay?
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting.
In 1966...
My aunt's boss...
Oh, that's right.
...at Revenue and Taxation, Nick Genovese, or pronounced Genovese... Same name. Although Nick Genovese, by all accounts, including my aunt, who was his secretary. Now, this is Revenue and Taxation for the state of Louisiana. Okay. Nick Genovese, he was a man of integrity, by all accounts, and fairness. And also, he knew my aunt was gay. Mm. And he didn't give her any trouble with it. And this, we're talking about the 1970s and the 80s.
So about the same time period.
About the same time period, yeah. 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 And this is kind of ironic here, is another member of the Genovese family, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just obviously family related, who was being fair-minded to the gay community.
In 1966... three members of the mafia invested $3,500 to turn the Stonewall Inn into a gay bar. This was after it had been a restaurant and a nightclub for heterosexuals. And once a week, a police officer would collect envelopes of cash as a payoff, known as a gayola. I know. Terrible.
And there you see, I mean, another example of conservative cops taking that gay money. And you know, we have that down here. We have police officers who work paid details for gay functions. So you know, as you see, money makes the world go round, and it's one case of money helping you better understand someone else, because I've known a few conservative cops who actually have they kind of developed a more favorable opinion towards the gay community because they actually got to know some of them. You know, they were getting paid as an employer,
mm-hmm.
you know, by them. And they were talking to them and getting to know some of them.
Right.
You know, and cultural engagement is one way that you can, you know, overcome whatever fears you have of a different culture.
Right. Well, these payments... was because the Stonewall Inn did not have a liquor license. Okay, so just putting that out there.
Right, right.
there was also no running water behind the bar.
Oh.
So dirty glasses were run through tubes of water and immediately reused. Okay, so, you know, there were no fire exits, which, I mean, that's just a big safety red flag right there.
Mm-hmm.
And the toilets overran constantly. Now, however, though, this was still a gathering place because this was a safe place for gay people.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So even though this sounds like the proverbial shithole bar, I mean, it was, again, a place of community. Okay. The bar was not used for prostitution. There was drug sales and other black market activities. And this was the only bar for gay men in New York City where dancing was allowed.
Oh.
Okay.
Dancing was allowed.
For gay men, yes.
Oh, yeah, you know,
because you can only...
Wow. Yeah. Kevin Bacon, you're needed here.
Kevin Bacon.
Footloose.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think Kevin Bacon would have been totally cool with gay people back then. I would like to think that.
Very, very likely, yes. Most celebrities, most actors and actresses are very open-minded individuals.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon, if you ever listen to this, we love you.
Yes, we love you, Kevin Bacon. We certainly do. We especially loved your appearance in the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. That was awesome. That was totally awesome.
Well, my favorite Kevin Bacon movie will always be Tremors, so there's that. All right, so visitors to the Stonewall Inn in...
A few good men.
Okay. So visitors to the Stonewall Inn in 1969 were greeted by a bouncer. They would inspect them through a peephole in the door. The legal drinking age was 18. And in order to avoid accidentally letting in undercover police, visitors would have to be known by name to the doorman, or they would have to look gay, which could mean so many different things.
It really could. a certain famous rock and roll artist took his draft card and reported looking gay, you know, wearing these tight leather pants.
Who was this?
I think it was Freddie Mercury.
Oh.
And yeah, he was excused.
Well, he was also really gay, so.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, not wanted by the culture of the military at the time. And to be honest, a gentleman who is, you know, not compatible with military life. I mean,
right.
You know, veterans, ask yourselves this, and most veterans who've been in a theater of operations know better. Do you really want someone, do you want to put your life in the hands of someone who doesn't want to be there?
Right. That's true, yeah.
Yeah. No thanks. No draft. No thank you.
So there were two dance floors inside of the Stonewall. The interior was painted black, which made it very dark inside, and they had pulsing gel lights or black lights. And if police were spotted, regular white lights were turned on, and this was the signal that everybody should stop dancing or touching. I mean, it's pretty terrible when you think about that.
Yeah, now, even during the 90s, there were covert gay bars, including in the New Orleans area. Okay. Whereas I actually went inside one of these with a gay friend during the 90s, and I was told not to say I'm straight. Mm. You know, I was curious, and I was... it was this guy, his name was also Brian, and he's the cousin of my girlfriend at the time, and he told me don't tell anyone in here that you're straight, because they will get mad at me for bringing a straight person in here. Okay, so you know, I know this, I have experience with this. You know, these bars didn't want to be known to the heterosexual community,
right,
for obvious reasons.
Right. So in the rear of this bar, there was a smaller room that was frequented by queens. It was one of two bars where effeminate men who wore makeup and teased their hair could go. All right. So only a few people in full drag were allowed in by the bouncers. And the customers were mostly men, but lesbians would sometimes come as well. Because police raids were frequent, many bars kept extra liquor in a secret panel behind the bar, or in a car down the block. Okay. So this is so they could resume business as quickly as possible after the raid if the alcohol was seized. Okay. I mean, it's crazy to me how much work they actually had to do to just have this space.
Yes, because this was law enforcement engaging what we certainly know to be now, and many of us, you know, knew then to be frivolous.
Oh, it gets worse. Bar management usually knew about these raids due to police tip-offs, and raids occurred early enough in the evening that business could go on after the police had finished. Now, during a typical raid, the lights were turned on and customers were lined up and their ID cards were checked. Those without ID or dressed in full drag were arrested. Others were allowed to leave. Some of the men, including those in drag, would use their draft cards as ID. Women were required to wear... This is ridiculous. Are you ready to do this?
Okay.
Okay, this is so dumb. You're going to want to tear your eardrums out, okay? Women were required to wear 3 pieces of feminine clothing and would be arrested if found not wearing them.
Good God Almighty. It's the United States of America under the governance of the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah. So if you're a woman who is dressed in jeans and a t-shirt and in the bar that night, you could get arrested.
Well, I mean, I can understand the establishment wants to have a dress code.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can ask you to leave. And then if you refuse to leave, of course, the charge is trespassing.
Which is a misdemeanor.
Which is a misdemeanor, yes. That I totally get. And that's 100% legal. But, wow. And being arrested for attire, I mean, that's definitely violation of the First Amendment.
All right. And we are back. During June of 1969, raids had closed down several bars. There is evidence that the mafia owners of the Stonewall and the manager were blackmailing wealthier customers and were making more money from extortion than they were from liquor sales in the bar. So because of this, the police could not get their payola. Okay?
Mm.
So they decided to try to close down Stonewall Inn permanently.
Mm-hmm. And the irony of that it's like this is like a rare instance of where police payoffs were actually doing something good. Were actually doing something good.
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
Yeah, it's really really ironic and then tragic that frivolous law enforcement starts taking place because the payoffs disappear, which of course is a predictable outcome.
So they also had this thing, and I mean, even if it doesn't officially exist anymore, it feels like it still unofficially exists. The Public Morals Squad. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's old school.
Yeah. Well, it was a thing, right? And so on the night of June 28th, 1969, they were a group of the Public Morals Squad. 2 undercover police women and 2 undercover police men were at the bar that evening. The cops went into the bar, okay? And once ready, the undercover officers called for backup. Stonewall employees do not recall being tipped off that a raid was going to occur that night, like how they were usually tipped off, okay?
Mm.
And around 1:20 a.m., the policemen and policewomen in dark suits, 2 patrol officers in uniform, Detective Charles Smythe and Deputy Inspector Seymour Pine arrived at the Stonewall Inn and announced police were taking the place.
Here come the Keystone Cops.
All right. So
yeah, if you're probably not listening, but if you are, yeah, back then you were a joke. Okay? You were a joke.
The music was turned off and the main lights were turned on as usual. About 205 people were in the bar that night. Patrons who had never experienced a police raid were confused. A few who realized what was happening tried to run, exit the building, but the police barred the doors. Which is so many things wrong with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
A man named Michael Fader shares what he remembered that night. He said that things happened so fast, you kind of got caught not knowing. All of a sudden, there were police there, and we were told to all get in lines and have our ID ready to be let out of the bar. But on this night, the raid did not go as planned. Standard procedure, of course, was to line up the patrons, check their ID, and have a female police officer take customers dressed as women to the bathroom to verify their sex, which is so horribly violating and disgusting.
Yes, yes. And it's, verify their sex. And one would ask, you know, to what end of this? What law is being broken? Now, keep in mind here, the biggest reason for a quote, now in Louisiana law enforcement, this is called a shakedown, okay? Or as you raid a bar because you're suspecting two things. You're suspecting that there are violent criminals inside concealing weapons, okay? And you suspect that there's there's underage drinkers, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why you line them up and you check their IDs, because you're looking for underage drinkers, okay? And you'll do pat downs for concealed weapons, okay? But it's obvious that that's not what this is about. That this is about a so-called crime that law enforcement is considered is actually political in nature.
Yes, and you know, if quote unquote verify their sex, right? So if it was a person dressed as a woman but had male genitalia, or vice versa, they would be arrested, which is horrible.
Making it illegal for a man to dress like a woman, it's ridiculous. You know, I mean, if you don't approve of a man dressing like a woman,
don't look.
Yeah, don't look. If you want to laugh, go ahead and have a laugh. Chuckle to yourself.
You know, like, okay, how Jesus told dudes to, like, pull their eyes out to avoid lust. Same thing. Pull out your eyeballs if you don't want to see it.
Yes, of course. It's, you know, it means just avert your stare. Cover your eyes. Don't pay attention. You know, of course, fundamentalists out there, of course, you know darn good and well it didn't mean pull your eyes out, you know.
Right.
Or pull someone else's eyes out for that matter. No, it didn't mean that.
Well, those who were dressed as women that night refused to go with the officers into the bathroom. And men in line started to refuse to produce their ID. The police decided to take everyone present to the bar, to take everyone present to the police station. After separating those, quote, suspected of cross-dressing, which, again, so stupid. Both patrons and police recalled that a sense of discomfort spread very quickly. This was, of course, part of this was caused by the police who began to assault some of the women, some of the lesbians, by feeling some of them up inappropriately while frisking them. Again, so grossly violating. So awful.
Yes.
Okay.
So frivolous. The only thing legit about this was that, yes, you do have to comply if you're in a bar and it's the proverbial shakedown. You do have to comply by showing ID. Okay, right. That's the part, that's the only part of this that was legal by any stretch of the imagination.
And the police were going to also confiscate all the alcohol, right? So they were going to transport all of this in patrol wagons. While they waited on the wagons, those who were not arrested were released, but they did not leave, and eventually a crowd of about 150 people gathered. A woman in handcuffs was escorted from the door of the bar to the police wagon several times because she escaped repeatedly and fought with four of the police officers while swearing and shouting for several minutes. She had been hit on the head by an officer with a baton, and one witness, or this is according to a witness. She also complained that her handcuffs were too tight, and bystanders recalled that the woman, whose identity actually remains unknown, she sparked a crowd to fight when she looked at the bystanders and shouted, "Why don't you guys do something?" After an officer picked her up and heaved her into the back of the wagon, the crowd turned violent.
Understandably so, because someone was being subjugated by the police right in front of them. Okay, keep in mind this is way before cell phones.
Yes, there was no recording this.
Yeah, at the time, no camcorders either,
or private security cameras.
Right, none of those things. Right. And also, regarding striking someone in the head with the baton, I believe that was actually not allowed even back then.
Well, it's also like in our last episode, we talked about brain damage and what that can do if you hit somebody in the head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The police tried to restrain some of the crowd. They knocked a few people down, and of course, this made the bystanders even more angry. Some of those handcuffed and already in the wagon escaped because the police left them unattended. The crowd slashed the tires of some of the police vehicles and tried to overturn the police wagon. The wagons left immediately, with Inspector Pine urging them to return as soon as possible. And of course, the crowd grew even bigger. I mean, this is a big commotion now, right? You have people who just live in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Getting up out of their beds and they're like, hey, what's going on? Let's go see what's happening.
Yeah.
So this was no longer a private thing where these police officers could violate these bar patrons. Okay. This is now a public neighborhood thing.
Yes. There were obviously people who, though not gay, but were sympathetic to leaving other people alone.
Right.
You know, just leaving people alone, who were like wondering, hey, what the hell? Why are you harassing these people?
Right. Someone in the crowd, I love this part, someone in the crowd declared that the bar had been raided because they didn't pay off the cops. There is truth to that. Someone else yelled, let's pay them off. They started throwing coins and beer cans at the remaining police officers.
that's hilarious. Now, keep in mind, we do not advocate attacking police officers. Okay?
Right.
But
no, we don't.
But in reality, with regard to the Constitution, what these officers were doing was actually unlawful. And this was, although you might not consider this to be, let's say if you are a legal scholar, you might not consider this to be reasonable force, okay,
mm-hmm.
to resist unlawful arrest, okay, but that is what's going on here. Unlawful arrest is being resisted and protested.
Right, and also the Constitution, in my opinion, the Constitution encourages fighting back against your oppressors. And in this instance, law enforcement were absolutely the oppressors.
Yes, but to be more specific, yes, the Constitution does uphold resisting unlawful arrest.
Yes.
Of course, you have to be careful with that, because whether or not you are resisting an unlawful arrest is typically going to be decided inside a courtroom.
Nearby all of this commotion was a construction site. And do you know what was at that construction site?
What?
Bricks.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Violent mobs love bricks.
It is unclear as to who actually threw the first brick. But we'll get into this person in a moment. Marsha P. Johnson, who was at the riot that night, she always claimed that she threw the second brick.
Well, she doesn't know for sure.
And at this point, the crowd is like 500, 600 people large. The police grabbed several people, including a folk singer and the mentor of Bob Dylan, Dave Van Ronk, who actually lived next to the Stonewall Inn, and he had come to observe the action. Even though Van Ronk was not gay, he had experienced police violence when he participated in anti-war demonstrations, and he said, as far as I was concerned, anybody who would stand against the cops was all right with me, and that's why I stayed there. Every time you turned around, the cops were pulling some outrage or another. 10 police officers, including 2 police women, barricaded themselves, Van Ronk, and Howard Smith, who was a column writer for the Village Voice, and several handcuffed detainees inside of the Stonewall Inn for their own safety. Multiple accounts of the riot assert that there was really no pre-existing organization or apparent cause for the demonstration. It was kind of spontaneous.
Yeah.
Which...
understandably so, because this was...
generally true of a riot.
What was going on was not hearsay to these people. They saw it.
Right.
And they were understandably angry because they had already been appraised, had already heard of previous civil rights violations by police officers. Certain police officers, okay? And keep in mind, the city of New York has tens of thousands of police officers. Like today, for example, it's a force of 30,000 officers, okay? It's
oh, I didn't know it was that many. Okay.
It's like a small army.
Well, it's also a very big city.
Yeah, very big city. Okay.
It's a megalopolis.
So yeah, out of that number, you're going to have bad apples. You're going to have some tyrants with a badge who just enjoy doing certain terrible things to people they don't like. So we're seeing that in action right here and there, and it's taking place before their very eyes, and they feel they can do something about it, and they are.
Right. And again, you know, where it says no organization, right, this means that this was not a protest march that had a permit or anything like that. This was a crowd of angry people.
Yes.
Yeah,
some of them saw themselves as good Samaritans, and understandably so.
Yeah. Michael Fader, once again, hearing again from Mr. Michael Fader, he says that we all had a collective feeling that we just had enough of this kind of shit. It wasn't anything tangible that anybody said to anyone else. It was just kind of like everything over the years had come to a head on that one particular night in the one particular place, and it was not an organized demonstration. Everyone in the crowd felt that we were never going to go back. It was the last straw. It was time to reclaim something that had always been taken from us. All kinds of people, all different reasons, but mostly it was total outrage, anger, and sorrow. Everything combined, and everything just ran its course. It was the police who were doing most of the destruction. We were really trying to get back in and break free. And we felt that we had freedom at last, or freedom to at least show that we demanded freedom. We weren't going to be walking meekly in the night and letting them shove us around. It's like standing your ground for the first time, and in a really strong way, that's what caught the police by surprise. There was something in the air, freedom a long time overdue, and we're going to fight for it. It took different forms, but the bottom line was we aren't going to go away, and we did not. It's very powerful words.
Yeah, it's easy to make the argument that they were being true red-blooded Americans by standing up to tyranny and make no mistake about it. This was tyranny in action. And now keep in mind, okay, from one time or another, of government organizations and even the best of countries in the world wind up having some of their numbers engage in tyranny.
Right.
Okay. And when it does happen, it has to be checked. It has to be stopped before it consumes that organization. And that organization no longer stands for, in this case, that organization no longer stands for truth and justice.
No, it does not. And we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. And we are back. At this point, garbage cans. Garbage. From those cans. Bottles, rocks, and bricks were being thrown at the building, and it broke the windows. Witnesses attest that what are called flame queens, hustlers, and gay street kids who are the most outcast people in the gay community were responsible for the first volley of projectiles. They also uprooted a parking meter and used it as a battering ram on the doors of the Stonewall Inn.
Uprooted a parking meter. Wow.
Uprooted a parking meter.
I'm wondering how they accomplished that. Maybe ramming it with a vehicle?
That's possible, yeah. Or...
Wow. Or someone somehow found a sledgehammer. That's quite a feat.
But also, you know, a quote that I had thought of when I was looking up this information is, a riot is the language of the unheard. These people were unheard.
Yes.
And
yes.
If you feel like people are not listening to you, the more desperate your actions can get. And that can include uprooting a parking meter.
Yes. And honorable and responsible city officials will admit that there are certain actions that can start riots are responsible for starting riots.
And that's a Martin Luther King Jr. quote, by the way, that a riot is the language of the unheard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, so, yeah, if your government and you commit certain acts of tyranny, yes, don't be surprised if onlookers who witness this act of tyranny riot. Don't be surprised.
Well,
also, otherwise they just go about their daily lives. People don't riot just to riot in general. Okay.
Right. And also these kids, you know, the brashness of youth can be a wonderful thing to behold sometimes. Okay? Like you're young, you give less fucks about certain things than you would as an adult.
You've got time on your hands and you're more willing to take risks, and you are more likely to fight if you feel the need arises.
Right. Yes. So these young people, okay, they were catered to by the Stonewall Inn because, again, this was a time where you didn't have, you know, gay homeless youth shelters. Okay? You didn't have any place for these young kids to go after they had been thrown out of their homes.
Yeah, to be with people whom they identify with as their particular subculture, their community.
Their family.
Their found family. Okay? Okay? So for these people, okay, the proverbial gay bar was what was to them was what the comic book shop or the gaming shop or the science fiction convention was to me.
Or for me, the library.
As a teenager. Or the library. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's kind of along the same lines.
Right.
It's that place where you're accepted, where you feel you're part of a community, where your found family is, not the family you were born in.
Right.
You see. And it's very much tyrannical to take that away from someone.
Yes.
Just like it would be an act of tyranny if the police, let's say if for some reason the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Department found trumped up some reason to close down +1 games or go for games, a couple of gaming shops. Okay, that would be an act of tyranny on both counts, you know, would be.
So, again, you know, these young kids, they had nothing to lose other than the one place that they could be safe in at this point in time.
Yeah, your safe space. Yeah.
So these were the people who fought. Probably the most exuberantly. Okay, and I'm not criticizing them.
No, me neither.
It was a necessary action for this, right?
Yeah, they felt like everything was being taken away from them. That's how they felt in the moment,
yes.
And they felt like there was nothing. Nothing else left to lose, so they decided to fight.
Yeah. And at this point, also, fires were being started, and there is dispute over who actually started the fire. Some people say that the mob lit garbage on fire and stuffed it through the broken windows as the police grabbed the fire hose, but there was no water pressure, so it could not disperse the crowd. And it's only encouraged them, as a matter of fact. Now, Marsha P. Johnson, she was an African-American street queen. She got there at around 2 a.m., and at that point, the riots were well underway with the building in flames. As the riots went on into the early hours of the morning, Marsha P. Johnson, along with Zazu Nova and Jackie Hormona, were noted as the three individuals known to have been in the vanguard of the pushback against the police. And Marsha P. Johnson later said that the police had started the fire in the bar. So again, it is disputed as to who actually started it. But, you know, at this point, it doesn't really matter.
I don't think the patrons would have set that bar on fire personally.
I think you're right.
But that doesn't make any sense. Just the same as... I couldn't think of a reason to set any of the comic book shops I frequented or the gaming shops I frequented on fire. So, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But of course, in this instance, those particular police were going to accuse the other side of setting their favorite bar on fire. Yeah, right. Tell it to the judge.
When the demonstrators broke through the windows, they had been previously covered by plywood to deter the police from raiding the bar. The police inside unholstered their pistols and the doors came open and the officers pointed their weapons at the angry crowd and they threatened to shoot. Howard Smith, who was in the bar with the police, took a wrench from the bar and stuffed it in his pants because, you know, good to have a weapon. He watched someone squirt lighter fluid into the bar. As it was lit and the police took aim, sirens were heard and the fire trucks arrived. And this whole riot lasted about 45 minutes, and that's a long time for this kind of thing to be going
tactically on. Speaking, yes. Tactically speaking, a 45-minute fight is a long fight. You don't want fights to last. You don't want riots to last. That 45 minutes is a relatively long time for that, yes.
When the violence broke out, the women and transmasculine people being held down the street at the Women's House of Detention joined in by chanting. They set fire to their belongings and tossed them into the street below. Historian Hugh Ryan says, "When I would talk to people about Stonewall, they would tell me that night on Stonewall we looked to the prison because we saw the women rioting and chanting, 'Gay rights, gay rights, gay rights.'" So even women from the prison were getting in on it, lighting their own things on fire in support of the Stonewall Inn.
Wow.
Okay, pretty incredible. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Violating prison rules to protest.
Yes.
Not unwarranted given the severity of this tyranny going on.
At this point, the tactical patrol force of the New York City Police Department arrived to free the police trapped inside of Stonewall. One officer's eye was cut and a few others were bruised from being struck by flying debris. Bob Kohler, who was walking his dog by the Stonewall that night, saw the tactical patrol force arrive and he said, "I had been in enough riots to know that the fun was over. The cops were totally humiliated. This never ever happens. They were angrier than I guess they had ever been because everybody else had rioted. But the ferries were not supposed to riot. No group had ever forced cops to retreat before, so the anger was just enormous. It seemed like they wanted to kill."
And keep in mind that this could not have been, you know, all members of the gay community, okay? There were definitely allies of the gay community involved in this who were upset about what was being done to their gay friends. You know, that level of a crowd, that those numbers, no, this was these were other people who had been pushed around by a handful of tyrannical cops.
Mm-hmm.
And they were upset about being pushed around themselves, and they're seeing their friends being pushed around, and that's it.
Right.
They witness, and they witness this before the rise, so yeah, they reached their breaking point.
Right. Police detained anyone that they could, and they put them in patrol wagons to go to jail. But, and this is a quote from Inspector Pine. He says that fights erupted with the transvestites who would not go into the patrol wagon. And his recollection was corroborated by another witness as well. He said that all I could see about who was fighting was that it was the transvestites, and they were fighting the most furiously. Of course, transvestite word is an outdated term now, but again, that's a quote from them, not from me.
Yeah, that's from back then. Different, you know, different identity, different terminology.
Craig Rodwell, the owner of the Oscar Wilde.
No, I'm sorry, let me correct myself. What? Same identity, but different terminology.
Okay. Craig Rodwell, owner of the Oscar Wilde Memorial Bookshop, reported watching police chase participants through the crooked streets, only to see them appear around the next corner behind the police. It's like a Roadrunner chase, it sounds like.
Yeah. And here we go, Keystone Cops.
Members of the mob stop cars, and they overturn them to block Christopher Street. Jack Nichols and Leige Clark, in their column printed in Screw, declared that massive crowds of angry protesters chased the police for blocks, screaming, "Catch them." The Tactical Patrol Force formed a phalanx, thank you.
Which was invented by the Spartans, I believe.
Yeah, we were talking about that movie the other night, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They attempted to clear the streets by marching slowly and pushing the crowd back. The mob openly mocked the police. The crowd cheered, and they started an impromptu kick line, which I think is, I mean, it's hilarious. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
A kick line. Right? Just to mock the police. I love that. They sang, "We are the Stonewall Girls. We wear our hair in curls. We don't wear underwear. We show our pubic hair." By 4 a.m., the streets had nearly been cleared. Many people sat on stoops or gathered nearby in Christopher Park throughout the morning. They were just dazed. Probably a lot of thousand-yard stares going on, a lot of processing.
That's a lot to see in such a short period of time.
Yes.
Yeah, so... I mean, it's such a dramatic change. I mean, I've been through this kind of stuff myself. It's such a dramatic change in the situation. You're kind of in shock.
Right.
You're just staring on and on and on and on.
But there was something beautiful that transpired that night. Do you know what it was?
Well,
between men and women who, you know, gay and lesbian, whoever was remaining in the streets that night, open expressions of love. This is when they started to openly express their love for each other.
Which is a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. When you see someone else express their love for someone else, it is a beautiful thing.
It is.
No matter who they are.
During the siege, Craig Rodwell called the New York Times, the New York Post, and the Daily News to tell them what was happening. All three papers covered the riots, and the Daily News placed coverage on the front page. News spread quickly throughout Greenwich Village, and all day Saturday, June 28th, people came to stare at the burned and blackened Stonewall Inn. Graffiti appeared on the walls of the bar declaring, "Drag power. They invaded our rights, support gay power, and legalize gay bars." There were also accusations of police looting, but there was also a sign regarding the status of the bar, and that status was, "We are open."
Wow, that's nice. That's nice. And yeah, the police looting doesn't surprise me. I mean, historically, certain items confiscated from suspects, whether legitimately or not legitimately confiscated, sometimes end up in police the personal vehicles of police officers, the homes of police officers, and confiscated alcohol, I've no doubt. a portion of that ended up going home with police officers. I don't doubt that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There was actually more rioting the next night. This was around Christopher Street, and witnesses remember this a little bit differently. I'm sorry, people don't remember which night was more frantic or violent, the first night or the second night, which makes sense. You know, that's a lot. It's a lot going on.
It's going to be something like that. It's going to be a blur.
Many of the same people returned from the previous nights. Remarkable to many, again, was just this sudden exhibition of homosexual affection in public. This was described by one witness as, from going to places where you had to knock on a door and speak to someone through a peephole in order to get in. We were just out. We were in the streets. Thousands of people had gathered in front of Stonewall, which had opened again. This backed up Christopher Street until the crowd spilled into adjoining blocks. The crowd surrounded buses and cars. They harassed the occupants unless they either admitted they were gay or indicated their support for the demonstrators. Marsha P. Johnson was seen climbing a lamppost, and she dropped a heavy bag onto the hood of a police car and shattered the windshield. And as on the previous evenings, fires were started in garbage cans throughout the neighborhood. More than 100 police were present from the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 9th precincts. But after 2 a.m., again, the tactical patrol force arrived. Kick lines and police chases waxed and waned. And when police captured demonstrators, they described them as sissies or swishes. And the crowd surged to recapture their people again.
You know, it's kind of hilarious to call people engaging in a violent riot sissies.
It is, or fairies.
The sissies are the quote. I guess fairies would run away.
Mm. Okay. Well, that's the implication that they would run away.
Yeah, right. Of course. But of course, you know, you're angry at somebody, you hate someone, you're in opposition to them. So, you know, you're gonna say things about them. You're gonna be very
derogatory.
Yeah, and you're gonna be very catty.
Yeah,
very, very, very catty about it too. Now, given it's of course illegal, and yes, it is immoral to destroy, to just arbitrarily destroy police property. However, law enforcement in this case brought it upon itself by engaging in in activity that's actually illegal.
Yeah, fuck around, find out.
And tyrannical, okay? So they brought this upon themselves. This is an instance where police were responsible for these riots.
Right.
They brought this on themselves.
A beat poet and longtime Greenwich Village resident, Allen Ginsberg, lived on Christopher Street, and he was watching all of this go down. And after he learned of the riot that occurred the previous evening, he said, "Gay power, isn't that great? It's about time we did something to assert ourselves." He visited the open Stonewall Inn for the first time, and while walking home, he declared to his friend, "You know, the guys there were so beautiful. They've lost that wounded look that fags all had 10 years ago." Those nights in Greenwich Village were recognized as the start of gay pride celebrations. This was ground zero for that. Stonewall Inn is still in business today. Across the street from the Stonewall Inn is a small gated area called Christopher Park. In that park is the Gay Liberation Monument. This is a sculpture that depicts a seated lesbian couple and a gay male couple standing. The couples are innocently yet affectionately touching each other. And what you may not know, here's that connection to Louisiana that I promised. The person who commissioned that sculpture is Dr. Peter Putnam, who lived in Houma, Louisiana.
Ah, that is a familiar name down here, yes.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
And in our next episode, we are going to talk about Dr. Peter Putnam, because he is a very important member of gay history. And our next episode for Crescent City Crime Proper will be on Thursday, June 15th. We're not going to leave you hanging because we are going to have we're still going to do as full of a month as we possibly can. And of course, look for our Patreon episode in a week. Now, Brian, you've heard all of this. You have any final thoughts?
Yes. Standing up for yourself, okay? When authorities act illegally against you, engage in acts of tyranny against you, fighting for your rights is 100% American. It is patriotic because that is one of the things that distinguishes us from other countries that are not governed by a constitution like the U.S. Constitution, which gives us the tools to fight tyranny and make ourselves a better country. The U.S. Constitution has everything we need to address it. And here and there, we do need a little bit of revolt to get things going. Sometimes to get things into a courtroom, to get legislation passed. Okay, sometimes we do need a little bit of revolt. And that's what this was. You know, the gay community from Greenwich Village did not overthrow the city of New York. Okay, they did not go to war against the NYPD. Okay, they simply stood up for themselves as red-blooded Americans, whether that's what they were thinking or not, they did it.
That's a very good way to put it. Very good way to put it. You know, because what I see here, when I think of Stonewall, right? When I think of what people went through to essentially be left alone. You know, this isn't the first time in our nation's history that this kind of thing has happened, and it won't be the last.
No, and this, you know, there's a lot of good that came of this. Even though, in this instance, if the police would have actually would have pursued actual criminals, investigate actual crimes, of course, this wouldn't have blown up in their face, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, historically speaking, it was meant to happen so that a movement could be triggered to stand up for gay rights nationwide.
Very well said. Very well said. You know, and again, for anybody listening to this, please let this episode serve as a reminder that you're not powerless.
No, everyone has, every human being does have power. A limited amount versus, say, government, mind you, but you do have power, and you have even more power if you combine your actions with other people.
Yes, there is community out there. In this day and age, the one thing that we have better than anything else is communication.
Yes.
There are so many different ways that you can get in touch with organizations that can help you, where you can find a sense of belonging, whatever that might mean to you. It's all here for us today. You know, united we stand, divided we fall.
Use the power you have while you're still alive.
No, yeah, and that could be, and also recognize that could change as you age. Like, you know, these days, I, you know, have a recurring donation to the Human Rights Campaign, Planned Parenthood. You know, it's just so then that, because if, you know, I'm sorry guys, I'm kind of old. I'm not going out to protests and riots, but I am going to give money to organizations that will help people.
And I donate to the ACLU on a monthly bank draft, and I will continue to do so.
Right.
Okay. So that, because I'm, you know, that's one way I'm using my power, mm-hmm, to fight for the rights of individuals.
Yeah, this could also mean you could have a podcast like we do. I mean, this is another platform for us to, you know, help get some information out there, preserve some history, because it's really funny when you think about it. It's only been in recent years that we've had gay history actually being typed out, written down, shared. You know, before this, it was a lot of oral history only.
Yes, yes.
So even writing down history is powerful. You declaring yourself to be whoever you are is also powerful.
Taking up for your friends.
Taking up for your friends.
Who are different from you is also powerful. Marching in a pride parade, even if you're not gay, marching with your gay friends, which I did, mm-hmm. believe it was, what was it, 7 years ago?
I think.
About roughly 7 years ago, with members of a crew of Chewbacca's here in New Orleans, I marched with some gay friends in a pride parade,
mm-hmm.
and experienced the positive energy of the crowd, which seemed to be of a more intense power, positive energy than a Mardi Gras crowd, which I know the difference primarily because, yes, I've marched in Mardi Gras parades.
We both have.
Yeah. When I was a Civil Air Patrol cadet in high school and as a member of the 501st Legion costuming, you know, as a Star Wars character.
Right.
Which, of course, there were members of Crew of Chewbacca's and that, you know, those crowds as well, you know.
Yeah, but also there are in parts of the world today where it is still illegal for any expression of homosexuality whatsoever. I think Uganda in particular, I believe it's a crime that's punishable by death, but there are still people who live in Uganda who are brave enough to still have pride celebrations.
Yeah, yeah, that's, you could be killed, beaten to death on the streets of Uganda for that. And if you live in Uganda, even if you're not gay, what's terrible about that, but the government being empowered to suppress and, you know, murder and prison people who are gay, what's to stop them? You have an altercation with a cop. What's to stop them from saying, oh, you're gay, you're going to jail.
Right.
You're gay, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. And if my supervisor asks me why I beat you up, I'm going to tell him you're gay.
You know, yes.
That's, you know, we're kind of hitting on here why police departments should not be empowered in any way to engage in tyranny against any particular group of people, because they could just say that an innocent person, in their eyes, someone who's innocent and not part of that group, they'll include you in that group and they will come to get you too.
And this is also why we say lawyer up. Because if you are just carted off somewhere for being suspected of being gay or whatever, it's a ridiculous reason to imprison anybody. And this is why you get an attorney.
Yes, yeah. Like, for example, if you believe you've been pulled over by the police because you're black, okay, the best place to fight this is a courtroom. Lawyer up. Okay? Because that's where you will have power. But in that instance, one-on-one against the police, they've got the power there. But when you bring them into a courtroom, that's where you have the power. That's where the Constitution is on your side.
Right. Right. All right, everybody. Well, this is going to wrap up our episode for now. So everybody, until then, be safe, be kind. Remember that we're all human beings. Love yourself, love each other, and don't forget the bricks.
Yeah. If it's dark, it's dangerous, you don't feel safe, don't be there in the first place. And if you do not want to participate in a protest or a riot, yes, go ahead and walk the other way. That is also your right as an American as well. Okay? Stay out of trouble if that is your best option for your safety. Okay? And if you are interacting with law enforcement in a professional capacity, and you are not the victim or the witness to a crime, lawyer up.